This hour was brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.
Hour 2 Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 on the TSN app, your home smart speaker, and up on TSN 2. Brian Hayes, Dave Festchuk from the Toronto Star. Mike Johnson, our TSN hockey analyst, will join us around the table here momentarily. And TSN 1050's trade deadline coverage is powered by CertainTeed, the pro's choice for top quality drywall insulation, ceiling systems, premium shingles, and siding. CertainTeed Pro all the way. Kyle Dubas will join us in about 40 minutes as well. We just heard from him in the last hour. And he's a confident guy. He feels good about his team. I think he feels good about the work he's done. They've added, you know, a lot of pieces here. Nick Foligno is the main piece. I think David Riddick has the potential to play a very important role if he gets in the net as a third-string goalie right now. And even adding Riley Nash late last week, Ben Hutton as a defensive depth piece, I like it. And in terms of the amount of draft capital they gave up, you got to pay to play the game. And as Dubas pointed out during his presser, Dave, the previous three drafts, even though they didn't have first-round picks that they traded for Muzzin and they traded to basically unload Marlowe, they had accumulated a lot of other picks. And they got back in the first round last year by trading Kapanen. And they feel good about their prospect pool. I think they feel good about their high-end prospects, and they did not give up any of them. So that's the justification. And from that standpoint, with a very good team, arguably the team that has the best chance at going to a Stanley Cup final since that team in 2002, I think most Leaf fans are fine with that price.
I think you got to be fine with it. I think what it says, though, Hayes, is that there's a real urgency here. Like, we're in year 7 of the Shanna plan, right? And they still haven't won a playoff series. That fact, I know for a fact that weighs on this administration, right? This management group. For all the great progress they've made and all the great regular seasons they've had, they still really haven't done it when it matters. And so I think this proves their commitment to being ready when it matters. And I think they've done a lot of the right things that you'd want to do when you presume you're going to go on a playoff run.
Yeah, I think Dubas even addressed it during his presser. Like, he has learned from his first year here with Nonis, working a few years with Lou Lamoriello. Like, he is still a relatively young GM, but he's bold. He's a guy who's willing to go out there and get it. And he has made a lot of moves, and they've signed a lot of players since Kyle Dubas got here. This is not someone who has just kind of eased into things. I think that's always been the criticism of a guy like Kevin Cheveldayoff, the GM in Winnipeg, where he's been too hesitant to jump in. He's always holding on to his draft picks, always holding on to his prospects, and won't just go for it. And the Leafs have done that. And again, considering who they're going to match up against, if all things are equal and everyone is healthy, the Leafs are going to be favored to win a 7-game series against anyone they play in the country. Doesn't mean they're guaranteed to do that. I think Winnipeg could get them. Yeah. I think Edmonton could maybe get them. Montreal doesn't scare me as much, but we'll see how healthy they are. We'll see how Carey Price is playing come playoff time. But at what point over the last 15 years have the Leafs had A, as good of a team, or B, a pathway that doesn't include Boston and or Tampa and or Washington in the first two rounds?
Exactly. And that's why I think that's the other reason why it was worth it to spend that draft capital in this moment, because you're not going to get a pathway that's this easy. And I'm using kind of the air quotes for easy, because nothing's easy. Connor Hellebuck's not easy to beat. Guy's the reigning Vezina champion. Carey Price might not be easy to knock out of the playoffs. We don't know. I mean, there's been moments he hasn't looked great, and there's been moments he's looked like vintage Carey Price. So, you know, it's not an easy path, but it's easier. I'd rather see either of those two guys than Vasilevsky or Tuukka Rask.
Yeah,
and the teams they're attached to. Yep. So I'll take it all day. And I really give Kyle Dubas credit for recognizing the moment. Like, there was a moment earlier before the trade deadline, he had a press conference where he talked about how we want to be competitive year after year. And I was wondering to myself, is this guy getting it? Like, not about year after year. It's about this year, man. Like, this
they're
is
in a window.
The year.
Yeah, they're in a window. They expect to be a very good team next year. But clearly, with the way that they're built, there's going to be seven or eight guys, including the way Seattle's going to factor in on this, seven or eight guys you're going to protect, and there's going to be a lot of moving around in terms of the depth pieces, in terms of second pair, third pair, depth goaltenders. I mean, that's the reality of the cap era and what they've built here. Dave, you're at home. I'm in the studio. Mike Johnson has now joined us around the table. And Johnny, you and I, we had our thing going for the most part today.
Full day.
It was pretty good. I saw you got one more segment in.
Yeah, well, I got to get us right. I got to be there at 5. Like, yeah, we'll get you out plenty of time.
Yeah.
4:59.
That was me.
Like, 52 seconds.
Now I'm officially a meme. It's gone viral.
Yes, I saw you creeping in behind Duddy with your
I had to go.
But you got to work the other side of the room.
3:54. Yeah, but here's the thing about that. I didn't know where Duffy's camera was. You can see it up here on TSN 2. I get caught here. I do a stutter step, and then I'm like, I'm going. I'm committed. I didn't know which camera he was using. So the idea of me going around and then actually being right in front of the camera.
You duck in behind it. Tuck under.
Yeah.
But I do respect you playing through. Because once you make that first move and you're on camera, you got
to
keep going.
You have to go.
If you try to duck or get out of this, it's not going
to
work for you.
No, you have to go.
You got to keep playing through hard.
To me, the first thing that came to mind for me when I saw that MJ was, that looked like Pascal Siakam last night. A little hesitation.
It was.
Hayes kind of gets into the frame. Oh, no. Should I go or should I not go?
Yeah.
Of course, Siakam double dribbled. Hayes looked very smooth just carrying on.
Wasn't that Siakam's season in a nutshell last night? Like, end of the game. We're relying on you, max player. Can you, like, listen, he's got to start hitting big shots to end games. He's had how many this year, Dave? Like 3 or 4 opportunities to close games?
Oh, I think it was, I did a piece on it a couple days ago. It's more than that.
It's like, probably
it's
more
been
than
pretty
that.
Pretty bad.
But that's even more extreme. Like, it's one thing if you miss at the rim or if you pull up and take a jump shot from 15 feet out. You cannot turn the ball over there.
You got to get to the shot.
You have to get to the shot. And again, I am team tank at this point. I'm team lottery.
Yes.
So I was actually encouraged by last night. I don't need them beating the Knicks. I don't need them winning games. But you do need for the future Pascal Siakam to feel like he's a guy capable of closing a game out.
You wonder how much scar tissue is being created. He's a very good player, obviously. And he should have self-belief beyond this year. But when you have this many similar and really quite disappointing moments in a year, he's had a lot, like, you know, blown layups at the rim that he would make 85% of the time.
To say nothing about off the court.
And then the other stuff as well and being sat out of game. I just, you wonder when it gets back to more normal next year and he's playing in Toronto with fans, does this kind of just disappear or is it maybe leave a little bit of a mark?
I'm concerned because you go back to the bubble as well. I mean, he was absolutely awful.
But you'd give guys a pass in the bubble. Generally, like, you know what? You don't know what it's like mentally. You don't know what it's like you're going through. It's a very weird moment in the world. So I'm like, you know, if you don't feel comfortable, if you don't feel good about being there, forget about, like, basketball-wise, but just life-wise, and then it bleeds into your sport. I'm like, okay, but that should probably have gone away now.
It has to. Yeah, by this point, it has to. And I think with the issues that he's had with Nick Nurse, the fact that the fifth game in the season, I believe, he was sat out completely for whatever happened the previous night, it's not been a very encouraging.
It's not a banner
16
year
months.
For him.
No, it really hasn't been.
Don't forget, guys, this is his first year making that max dollar, right? This is the first year he's been the highest paid player on the team. And I understand where you're coming from, MJ, on giving him a pass in the bubble, but I think he took it to an extreme. Like, he essentially didn't touch a basketball for most of that lead up to the bubble from March to August. And it showed, right? Like, he looked as rusty as you could look. And then you kind of, he puts together this Red Bull-sponsored YouTube video series of his kind of recalibration, back-to-work, kind of Rocky IV type of sequence of him training his butt off, and he lays an egg out of the gate. You know, like, it hasn't looked good, and I guarantee you this franchise is extremely concerned about it.
Yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, if they're going to turn this around, because that's been the biggest, I think, discussion, or one of the bigger discussions and one of the more difficult practices, is trying to apply COVID to this season. Like, how much of the percentage is simply COVID related? The fact that they've been uprooted, the fact that COVID ran through their team as extensively as it did. And that's on Bobby Webster and Masai Ujiri to figure out. But This feels like it's going beyond that with Pascal Siakam. And if they're willing to grant that it's the majority of the issue is COVID-related, which I'm not, but let's say that they are because it's their product, it's their team, that would suggest next year they think they can get back to 50-55 wins. Mm-hmm. And if they're going to get back to 50-55 wins, Pascal Siakam has got to be a lot better. And they've got to improve the front court. They've got to find depth. Although Gary Trent Jr. looks like a player, I've been impressed by Malachi Flynn with some more minutes, but he's young. He's still raw.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of movement that has to happen here.
Rebounding. They were a good defensive team when they won. Like their defense at times this year has been very porous.
Yeah. And specifically, their perimeter defense has been terrible.
So, I mean, they know they have holes there, but, I mean, when it comes back to Pascal, if you think the pass is in the bubble and this year is COVID-related, well, that's two strikes. There can't be a third strike.
Yeah, exactly.
Because then the Raptors are out of it. They can't have this guy making the amount of money he is and playing the way he played this year all year for the rest of that contract.
But the thing is, if there is a third strike, they've already paid him.
Oh, yeah, they're done.
They've already committed.
When I say they're out, there's no getting out of it.
No,
exactly. They're in trouble to begin for long term.
Well, look, I you know, talking to people down there in Tampa this season, I do think there is an immense amount of frustration just with the whole situation. So there will be. There has to be, and there is, and we can all I'm not sure I'm as sympathetic. All you had to do was ship your Ferraris down to Florida, guys, and then get another place with some of your $30 million a year. It doesn't seem that difficult to me to live in Tampa. I don't know.
No,
maybe I'm just an unsympathetic guy.
You are unsympathetic. Hang on, yes. Dave. Just real quick from the athlete's perspective. You're right. You have the means to make that transition easier, but if you have a family of some kind. You're going to have to uproot them. And now, you know, whether it's kids or spouses or whatever, there's a comfort level, a housing level that's, you know, you're comfortable and familiar with. There's a routine. And then I don't know how people feel about living in a different city. Now, you don't always get to choose that. But if you sign a $30 million contract, presumably it's because you like that place as well as like the money. And so if you're asking me, I played in Toronto. I was traded in Tampa. Beyond Tampa being a bad team, I like living in Toronto way more than I like living in Tampa. Nothing to do with my sport. So, you know, you can't change that no matter how much money you have.
No, that's fair. That's totally fair. But I will say this. Look, and I think so, to my point, I think there are people within that franchise that matter, you know, who will grant guys a lot of leash here. They're willing to overlook a lot of bad games and a lot of stupid things that have happened this season. But I also think there's some people in that organization that are saying, hey, tough times brings out tough people. And I think there's a toughness question about Pascal Siakam here.
Yeah.
Has he been quite tough enough to be a max player, franchise carrying guy? And I think right now the answer is no.
So I called Johnny yesterday. When did I call you? Around maybe noon, 12:30, after lunch. We talked to each other on the phone. We were teeing up what we were going to do today on trade deadline. And he gave me the full breakdown. He said, you have about 10 minutes of my attention because after this, I don't want to be bothered.
Yeah.
And believe me, I wasn't trying to bother you either. I was going to watch the Masters and do the exact same thing you were planning on doing. But I might as well have bothered you because the Masters, outside of Japan, where full credit, if you're Hideki Matsuyama, and this has nothing to do with Matsuyama, full credit to him, he played well, won the tournament
decisively. The picture of him in the airport today.
The picture of him in Atlanta with the green jacket.
Draped over the lounge chair at the boarding gate with nobody
incredible.
Around him.
I like the guy more based on that
I
picture.
I guess so.
I love this guy. And he's going to Chicago for whatever reason.
He's connecting.
And then back to Tokyo. why can't this guy get his own bird? He just made $2 million at the Masters. He's going to make a fortune off this.
Tell Srixon to fire up the jet. Let's go.
No kidding. Let's go, Srixon. Figure it out and get him home. But I guess he's on his way there now. Maybe he's landed by now. But the reason we were planning on not talking to each other beyond the, one call at 12:30 was the fact that we were banking on some sort of meltdown from Matsuyama or some sort of charge. Mm. And as I was saying, outside of if you're from Japan or for whatever reason a diehard Hideki Matsuyama fan, that may have been the least memorable Masters tournament I can think of in the past 15 years. There was just nothing to it. The one time it got close was Schauffele on 16.
And it ended in 2 minutes.
And he puked all over himself and took a triple, and it was done. There was nothing to it. Nothing.
It's hard not to love the Masters. I mean, if you like sports and if you're at all into golf, but if you just kind of like sports, like the pageantry and the history, it's nice. It's, it looks good. It's visually appealing, the history of the major moments there. And I settled in. I was ready to go. And I saw Matsuyama kind of hook that first tee shot and kind of make a bogey. I'm like, okay, we're going to get something interesting happening here. I started flipping around after nine holes.
So was I.
I started trying to find something else to watch, which I guess is a credit to Matsuyama, scrambling genius, short game bailed him out and the rest.
And he did that all week, to his credit.
Nobody really made, I mean, he had four shots or whatever it was, but nobody really made enough of a charge to make him sweat until Schauffele was the only guy, and then it just all got away from him on the 16th. But, yeah, I never changed the channel. Like, it's always on the entire start to finish.
Yep.
And I did not finish the round.
No. And I was with you, and I don't know how you felt about it, Dave, but when he went wide right on one, I thought, here we go.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It's something's happening here. The moment might be too large for Matsuyama. If he shoots 73, 74, it's going to open the door for Spieth to take off, mm-hmm. Schauffele to take off, Leishman, maybe Corey Connors, who had a great start, just couldn't keep it together. But that was really the story, is that Matsuyama, he found a way to neutralize his game. He scrambled better than anyone all week.
Yeah.
And he found a way to just continue to plug away and tap in pars, and the guys around him, for the most part, just faltered. Like, no one took off.
And it goes to the fact, Dave, that golf is better with, like, it's, you want people to from everywhere to win, from 100 in the world on up, but it's better when the top five or eight guys are there. There was no DJ missed a cut, and Bryson was spraying it around, and
Rory didn't make it. Koepka was out.
All these guys, and it, you know, it's just less compelling because you don't know Matsuyama, you don't know Xander Schauffele, and you feel like you don't have any kind of connection to watching them on TV.
Yeah, totally. I mean, yeah, Matsuyama got a little lucky too, guys. Like that drive on 13, the par five, where it just clocks off the pine tree.
Yeah.
He totally put that thing into God knows where, and it clocks off the pine tree and goes into the second cut unharmed. I mean, that was the break of the tournament in a lot of ways, because if it would have kept going sideways, you know, as he was getting into the back nine, it might have been more dramatic. I thought Spieth was going to make a run, and that would have been, you know, the ultimate kind of drama, right? If the guy who was scarred by his collapse at number 12 all those years ago would have kind of won back to back, that could have been it, but wasn't to be. And hey, I mean, that, you're right. You need the best guys out there. And hey, maybe it said something that a year where Tiger wasn't there, we didn't get kind of the roars on Sunday.
I don't think that's a coincidence. I think there's some symbolism there, that the reality is we may never see Tiger play again at Augusta National. If we do, it may just simply be, hey, I'm going to give it a run, go out there and play, but not truly be competitive and be a guy that we think can win this tournament. And when you have names like Hideki Matsuyama, Will Zalatoris, even a guy like Corey Connors, who we're familiar with up here, but he's not necessarily a household name in Canada, and he's Canadian.
Right.
And, you know, it's just, it's not the most compelling leaderboard. And when you consider the guys that didn't even make the weekend, and I thought on Saturday, the fact that Thomas fell off, that was significant. I thought Justin Thomas was going to basically repeat what he did at the Players. And once he faded on Saturday, he was out of sight, out of mind. He was gone. John Rahm waited too long to put on a clinic. He had a great Sunday, but it was irrelevant. And it left you waiting for Matsuyama to complete the inevitable.
Yeah.
Like, it was just go ahead.
The whole thing.
Get your green jacket, good for you, but there's no drama here.
Just felt flat.
Yeah,
right?
It did.
And again, that's part of what makes Augusta so special, is that, you know, that 13 and 15 par fives, there's an opportunity for insanity, right? Bogeys, eagles, you name it, and none of it mattered. He was so far away. He's like, oh, if you get the
I wanted him to put that back in the water on the other side on 15.
Of course, yeah.
Like, that would have been incredible. Because Schauffele just missed that eagle out of the bunker as well. But you knew he was tapping in for birdie. If Matsuyama went over and back, then he's staring at like a triple, maybe a quad. But ultimately, the tournament was likely over before it even began on Sunday. If not, Schauffele had to throw a dart at 16. And when he put that in the water, it was done. Like, his face, you talk about a meme. I think I've gone viral.
Yeah.
Schauffele's face after he put that in the water was depressing.
As it should be.
Yeah, as it should be. Because he knew exactly
what happened.
But, Hayes,
I got to say, I completely disagree with your take on Tiger. He'll be back. and he will contend at Augusta.
No, you think so?
Really?
Yeah.
I hope you're right, Dave.
It's not about the will.
Him,
it's the body. Like, can the body? It was going to be hard pressed for him to get the body back to us before the accident.
I wasn't convinced that back
that
was going to let him
was
play
be
again
let him
anyway.
Swing fast enough and be aggressive enough through the ball to play the modern day courses. Even though he knows Augusta better than anyone and understands all the humps and bumps, but now. That is saying something, Dave. We're going to have to mark
that's
this one. That is
just reading,
putting it down.
Look, just reading the tea leaves of what people have been saying about him, the guys that have gone to see him, Rory talked about it a bit. A few of the other players have talked about going to see him down in Jupiter. And it doesn't sound like he's that bad off. It seems as though we saw the wreckage, but we didn't see him, right? We only heard about him. And from the eyewitness accounts, it doesn't sound like, he's not convalescing in traction.
I don't know, man. Multiple compound fractures of your lower leg seems like not ideal.
No, I know.
But it is his right leg, right? It's just
it's not his post-up leg.
It's kind of like what Koepka went through, but look at what Koepka went through.
How about him trying to read a putt?
He couldn't do it.
He looks like me after my knee surgeries. You're like, I can't bend down normally. I'm trying to do this awkward split stance like I'm a back catcher.
But I've always been a believer and a bigger believer that it's the back, Dave. That's the concern. Like, I'm not convinced. You saw him at the Genesis. You saw him before the crash, the day before the crash.
Waving at the ball.
Did not look good.
He did not look good. And that's his fifth major back surgery. You get through one, it's a gamble if you can make it back. This guy made it back after four. Now you add this on top of it. I'm not sure.
Like Larry Mize busting out at 82.
Yeah. Well, I hope you're right, Dave. I'm rooting for him. I mean, it would be a greater comeback than the 2019 comeback. Like him just playing and being competitive, making the cut. I think would be an even bigger story.
Was it not Ben Hogan who got in a really bad car accident?
Got hit by a bus.
And he was completely debilitated. And then he came back and took 2 years to get back. I think he was a bit younger.
Was he 45?
Yes, he's younger, but. You know what? I mean, I'm just trying to, draw some parallels.
I hope you're right.
I completely agree, MJ. I just think, you can now, for the average guy, it's over. You're not coming back. But Tiger's reminded us a number of times he ain't the average guy.
Yeah,
right?
No, that's valid.
And he's one of the great ones. And I just can't see, to me, this guy has thrived on those types of challenges. He loves that narrative. He loves that people are counting him out. And he will love to walk back on that property. In some kind of form.
Well, but that's what I'm saying, Dave. It's one thing to show up and play almost like ceremoniously.
75,
yeah, exactly. And be like,
that's
hey.
That's amazing, but he's not really ever going to win.
Exactly. Birdie's 18 on Friday and gets a big applause. Tiger roar, see you later. We'll see you next year. It's one thing for him to do that, which would be an incredible accomplishment based on what we've heard. It's another thing for him to be in contention. And if that's what you're suggesting, I think it's a bold take. I hope you're right, though. I mean, I'm fully supporting the idea of it happening.
So does every network and golf fan.
Absolutely. The Golf Report brought to you by your Ontario Subaru dealers. Kyle Dubas will join us in about 20 minutes. So we'll go through all of the deals courtesy of Kyle. We'll ask him about the Foligno deal. David Riddick is here. Ben Hutton, a depth defenseman, comes in. And obviously, Riley Nash late last week. They've given up a lot of draft capital, but no prospects, no live prospects, no live bodies on your roster. He mentioned during his presser they like what they've seen out of Galchenyuk, so maybe that's a guy who's here to stay and potentially play down the stretch run. Nick Robertson will make his debut tonight, so we'll get to that a little bit later on in the hour as well. Kyle Dubas coming up. Mike Johnson's in studio. I'm Brian Hayes. Dave Festruck from the Toronto Star is with us as well. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2. All right, Kyle Dubas will call in about 10 minutes. We'll catch up with the GM of the Leafs. The Leafs are in action tonight in Montreal. You can watch that game on TSN 4 here, right here on TSN Radio. Ray Ferraro will join us here in a moment. Ray will have the call tonight. Leafs-Habs, and then tomorrow night it's Leafs-Flames. And David Riddick, according to Sheldon Keefe this afternoon, will be available to play tomorrow. So I say play him.
So Calgary would be flying today for the game tomorrow.
I would assume so.
I would assume they would just let Riddick fly with the team.
I would hope so.
That
like especially with COVID and all
that
kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Why would you not?
Don't make him take a private plane. Keep him and just instead of turning right, just keep going down to the locker room, right?
Yeah. That'd be a little bit awkward, though. The final flight with the
boys. It would be very awkward, but you could have fun with it or it could be salty. Go one of two ways. Yeah.
Well, hey, Larry Tannenbaum set the plane for Kawhi. Why can't he set it for Big Save Dave?
Well, I would assume it probably went down to Columbus for
Nicky
Foligno, I would think. But that's a good point. I mean, Riddick, he's basically on the same wavelength as Kawhi. He's equivalently as important. Yeah. Yeah. Third string goalie, superstar. It's all about the same. Joining us now, the Maple Toyota Hotline, here's our TSN hockey analyst, Ray Ferraro. Ray, if that were to be the case, if Riddick is on that flight with the Flames, if he was your teammate and he was on that final flight with you guys before he potentially plays you tomorrow night, would it be chirping? Would it be what kind of mood swing would be happening on that flight?
Oh, I think you'd have a little fun with it, wouldn't you? I mean, like, you'd mention something and say, yeah, we can't tell you, you're with another team now. You know, if he was in the card game, you'd say, well, you can't play anymore.
Yeah, you have to.
Can't even. Yeah, I mean, like, I don't know. It's not like, first of all, he's a super popular guy. Secondly, I mean, he doesn't want to travel with you guys anymore either.
He's true.
He just wants to get to the next place.
That's a good point.
I don't think it would be bad at all, but I'll tell you, I did make a note today. So when they add Riddick and then they add Ben Hutton and they've already got Jack Campbell, these are like three of the happiest people on the planet.
Yeah.
Like, you wait till you get a load of Ben Hutton. He is I don't know if you guys ever saw the video of him dancing at the Canucks benefit dinner a couple years ago. I think he ends up with his shirt off. This is like in a big charity thing.
Black tie event.
Yeah, it is. And I forget the song he's dancing to. I'm a Barbie girl.
Oh, okay. David Pasternak special.
Yeah, so anyway, they got some happy boys in there anyway. I mean, they're a good team. They got better. They should be pretty super excited right now to get into it.
Yeah, well, I mean, we've heard you all day on TSN talk about it, but new audience here on Overdrive. Your thoughts, I mean, overall, I don't think there was a more active GM than Kyle Dubas, and I don't think there's another GM in the league that can check off as many boxes. He gets Foligno. Even Riley Nash is a depth centerman. You bring in Hutton, you bring in Riddick. I don't think he missed anything. What do you make of what Dubas has done here?
It looks a lot like last year when Tampa was a really good team and everybody knew they were a really good team, but you knew it wasn't quite right, and Julian Breezeball went out and was able to, what I call, target shop what his weaknesses were. They needed size, they needed bulk, they needed a little more hardness to the game. So they got Bogosian first, then they got Goudreau, and then Coleman, and they paid hefty prices for Coleman and Goudreau, yet the buys that he made helped them win the Stanley Cup. Oh, and they'd added Pat Maroon, in the summer as well. So they target shopped what they needed. It's exactly what you described, Brian, for what Dubas did. I thought he was really, there are times he's so forthright, like you learn a lot just listening to his press conference. And he said, Galchenyuk's plate needed to go get. So whatever they might have been searching for, maybe it was Taylor Hall. Well, they pivoted to Nick Foligno. And it's pretty easy to see the way the lines could be set up in a couple of different ways that, will they start Galchenyuk with, I mean, I'm talking about when you get into the meat, like right down to the last four or five games. Is Galchenyuk with Matthews and Marner? Does that leave Foligno and Nylander? Is that Hyman anchor that third line with Mikheyev and Engvall? And then you get down, Mets really crowded. You've got Kerfoot, who I didn't think was going to make it past the deadline. And Spezza, you got to think those two are going to be in the lineup. And then that leaves you Simmons and Thornton. Like, as I look at it, one of the older guys is not going to make the grade to start.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's crowded now, Ray. And I think one of the fascinating parts about the next month for Toronto will be with all these bodies. And they've mentioned, we wanted to have Joe Thornton with a prominent role to help him have a prominent voice. And if Thornton is sliding down the lineup and maybe his minutes, maybe in and out of the lineup, Wayne Simmons, maybe the same thing. I don't know. Like, how do you think, I mean, you just ran kind of through it, but do you think Foligno plays top six right away and Zach Hyman on the third line? Or do you think Hyman stays up there and Foligno goes on the third line? If you were setting it up, Ray, how do you think it works itself out?
I put Foligno up there because I want to know. I don't have to guess about Hyman.
Right.
I know if Hyman's got to go there, he's going to be just fine. I want to make sure the style we play fits Foligno, and if he doesn't get it right away, will he, you know, let's give him some games so he can figure out what Toronto does, which is obviously different than what Columbus does. And so I want to play him with two guy or two, one of those top two sets of pairs, just to see how he fits. Because I know Hyman can go in there. I even going to give him a little run, a little look, a shift here and there, in you know, in the middle of that third line, just in case Engvall is, you know, can't do it when the playoffs start. Again, like Sheldon Keefe has done this, guys, I think really well this year. He's moved people around because he wants to look at something else. He's not just necessarily looking at today. He's looking at what might be down the road. What are my options going to be if I've got to move people around? And that third center spot, if we're, you know, if I'm calling Kerfoot the fourth line with Setsa, maybe they're not, but that fourth or that third spot, that Engvall spot, that to me is not a spot that's locked. That's a spot that's under competition.
Hey, Ray, it seems, you know, obviously the situation regarding Freddie Anderson is pretty murky right now. For all the great feelings about all the acquisitions, that is the dark cloud that sort of hangs over the franchise. I don't know if you had a chance to hear everything Dubas said about Freddie, but if you did or if you didn't, but what do you think he was saying? Because it's obviously a little bit of a coded message from Dubas about what's actually going on with his number one goaltender.
Well, I didn't hear all of it, but I will. But obviously, Dave, the fact that they went out and got another goalie means whatever they're telling us isn't all of it.
Right.
And so they're not comfortable not making an addition. Like they had to. That's not nothing. A third round draft pick, right? Like that. If you're worried about two guys when you make that pick, like. You know, they're babying Campbell along here because they got to be careful. He's got an issue as well, and they're trying to manage it all. And if Anderson can't play and he gets back and he's healthy in the playoffs and he hasn't played in 6 weeks, well, that's like a bag of, you know, like a box of chocolates. You know, who knows what you're going to get?
Yeah.
The guy hasn't played in 6 weeks. His track record as well, by the way, if we go, it just, you know, would equate it to a start of a season. He generally starts slowly before he gets rolling. So without a few games to maybe get his feet back underneath him, it would be he's a huge question mark at this point.
With Ray Ferraro, our TSN hockey analyst, in terms of the other Canadian teams, is there one in particular that sticks out for you? On a positive side, negative side, like which team comes to mind first in terms of the other six Canadian teams based on what they did or did not do leading up to the deadline?
Well, to be honest with you, I kind of liked what Calgary did because I, like a lot of people, but I'll say me, was fooled by the transactions they made at the start of the season, into, you know, last summer and into this season. I thought they were going to be much better. But by trading Rittich and trading Bennett, expiring contracts in different phases, but expiring contracts, they helped set forth what the wheels in motion for what is going to happen. So I thought that those were, while it's been just an incredibly disappointing year for them, I thought those were the right moves that they had to make. And then I liked Ottawa. I mean, just collect the picks, right? You're moving guys that you weren't going to bring back anyway. Get your young guys in. Start evaluating them. I don't know. Is Eric Brandstrom a top four defenseman? He hasn't looked like it yet, but throw him in for 15 games. Don't take him out. Let him play. If he gets snowed under, then you got a good idea. If he does really well, that might change how you look forward. You're going to get Bernard Docker in the lineup, I think Bruce Garriott said, by Wednesday. And so now you're like, wow, we can see what this thing's going to start to look like because Jake Sanderson's a few months away. So I liked what Ottawa did, too. I didn't like what Winnipeg did.
I
just wish they would have been more aggressive to acquire somebody that could play up the lineup more. Jordy Benn's is a nice depth player, but he's not a difference maker. And, you know, obviously they got to a point where the prices being asked were something they weren't comfortable paying. This might have been a year, though, that I might have thought, geez, you know what, I'm not comfortable with it, but so what? Because we got a really good team.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think that appears to be the consensus, you know, coast to coast, basically waiting for Winnipeg to jump in, and it just didn't happen. Leafs Habs tonight. It should be a fun one. Enjoy the call. We'll do it again tomorrow at 5.
Yeah, I'm just reloading here after sitting on one chair from 5 in the morning to 2 in the afternoon.
Right.
You know, and seeing the, you know, seeing how this game's going to play out, I'm like, oh, yeah, I got a game tonight. I got to shift the old brain right now.
Yep, heavy lifting, man. Heavy lifting on a day like today. But you'll figure it out. You'll be fine.
I'll figure it out. I mean, it's not like, you know, you get a break. Like, Old's taking a few hours off here. Johnny jumps from the back bench to the front bench, and now he's right in here. You know, some guys just are a workaholic, eh, Johnny? It's just the way it is.
We got stamina part. We go a little more than 40 meters if we have to.
Yep.
What are you
going
to do?
That's right. That's right, man. That's right.
Stretch it out to 100.
Hey, Al's brother's literally right there. Watch yourself. Listen, don't get started with Al's brother.
I'll race Al's brother. I feel good about my chances.
Yeah, well, I think you'd be okay.
I will say it was unfair. They ran 42 meters.
Got a measurement there.
Yeah, it was an official measurement. So we'll give them another opportunity down the road. I think that's
perfect. Probably
fair.
I look forward to that.
All right, buddy. Have a great call tonight.
Later.
There's Ray Ferraro, TSN hockey analyst, joining us here on the Maple Toyota Hotline. Red Tag Days and the Maple Toyota Corolla-thon are back with rates from 0%. Shop in person by appointment or online at MapleToyota.com. So Leafs Habs tonight on TSN 4 and on TSN 1050. Also, Nick Robertson will play.
It's exciting.
I'm excited to see him play.
So much has gone on for Toronto this year, and it's a lot of it. Most of it's been great. Nick Robertson was supposed to be a big part of the story.
Right.
Good, bad, or whatever happened to him, we were going to learn some stuff.
Games 1-4 against Columbus, Robertson was in the lineup.
That seems like so long
ago. It does.
I have no recollection of what he played like and how good he can be. So I'll be excited. I'm sure he will be, too, to get back.
Yeah,
I'm
looking forward to seeing him play tonight. And I guess a man that was involved in that decision, a guy who's been very busy over the last week or so, joins us now. Here's the GM of the Maple Leafs, Kyle Dubas. How you doing, Kyle?
Hey, good, Brian. How you guys doing tonight?
We're doing very well. We'll get to the deals in a moment, but we're just talking about Nick Robertson getting his debut tonight. And that Columbus series in the bubble, Johnny just said, it feels like ages ago. It feels like a long, long time ago. So what should Leaf fans be expecting? What went into this decision, and what should we expect out of Nick tonight?
Yeah, I've locked the Columbus series out of my mind as well. Sheldon and I were talking about this today, and I just said, do you consider this as, that was a wild card qualifier series? So I said, would you consider this his first NHL game? And Sheldon reminded me that he actually played earlier this year in Ottawa when he got hurt, and I was like, general manager of the team should probably remember that, but
I didn't remember that either. So
yeah,
you're not alone.
And he said, he said that, you know, remember he got hurt in Ottawa in the third game of the season. So, you know, he's come back from that and gone and played for the Marlies. And really the situation was with the Barabanov trade happening today. Alex, who'd been in the lineup the last two games, you know, we had just felt he's played more recently than the other two members up front of the taxi squad who are on the trip. And, you know, it's his position at left wing that was coming open, and he's played pretty well for the Marlies. So let him get in here and fire away tonight.
All right, Kyle, to the day at hand, trade deadline. Maybe you just walk through whatever the last 3 or 4 days you had some sort of checklist in your mind or written down on paper, things you wanted to try to accomplish, trying to gauge the market and the costs and your salary cap and everything that has to go into it. How close were you to checking off just about everything on your list?
I think you, in the moment, you think you've tried to accomplish everything, and I mean, certain things are going to happen. The team's going to evolve the rest of the year, and you know, we'll look back in hindsight, and I think the goal is to try to look back on it. I think we've given the team the best chance, and you know, the things that we outlined going in were just given the situation to bolster our depth in net, and then to bolster our depth up front with a, you know, more defensive-minded, right-handed face-off guy that could kill penalties. And that's why Riley Nash came into it, and we had been talking to them, and then he got injured, and just by the confluence of all the different mechanisms of the salary cap and such, that actually made it more enticing for us, and it just worked out well with Columbus on him. And then, you know, the key to it was adding a forward with great competitiveness and defensive reliability, but also someone that could drive play and chip in on offense and play up and down our lineup. And that's where Nick Foligno came in, and then Ben Hutton today to bolster our depth on D. So we're fairly happy with how it went, but I think we still have a lot of room to develop in the rest of the year and set ourselves up for the playoffs once all the guys get in and rolling.
Hey, Kyle, a year ago and plus at the last trade deadline, things were not so clear for your team. You talked about how it was a Jekyll and Hyde operation. Mm-hmm. You seemed a little flummoxed about what your team was. So much has changed since then, including, I think, maybe the organizational philosophy about how you build a team. I mean, how would you lay that out?
I don't know. I mean, I certainly understood there couldn't be more polar opposites, Dave, in terms of the way that things have gone. I mean, that trade deadline, we were right in the middle of a stretch from January to the end of February where we just, you know, we had a lot of injuries, but we also just really weren't playing well overall. Like I would still have probably had a different mindset going into it if we had injuries, but we were really playing hard and playing well, and I just didn't think that we were. So earlier that month, we had attempted we added Campbell and Clifford to address things, and then it just sort of our you know, up and down play continued through February, and so it's sort of, you know, you thought the team was talented, but maybe we lacked some other elements, and so in the summer, you know, I think our philosophy in general has not changed, but just I guess what we feel have been mistakes, and those mistakes fall on me in terms of complementing the talent of the group with what goes around it, and so. You know, we obviously, the core of the group remains by and large the same, but just in terms of developing the competitiveness and the environment in the locker room and the accountability amongst the guys and the types of people that we have has really been the major focus from the off season in through the year here. So, you know, I think the core philosophy is the same, but I just think in lessons learned and my mistakes in the past has been, what type of complementary pieces can bring the most out of our group and push us to another level. And credit to the players. I think one of the key things for me and freeing us up to kind of act and behave the way that we have at this deadline has been that when we had a similar stretch early March, we lost 6 of 7 games. I thought we only had a few of those games where we actually really played poorly, the Saturday night game at home against Winnipeg and then the following night in Ottawa. And the rest of them, I thought we were playing well. And then the guys stabilized themselves and pulled their way out of it. And I thought that was a really, really positive sign of growth from the group, because that type of thing didn't really happen last season. And so that's sort of been the guiding improvement or development, you might say, that led us to sort of make the moves we made in the last several days.
With Kyle Dubas, yourself and Sheldon have been pretty consistent since the end of last year that ultimately you guys are going to go where your best players are going to drag you. Yeah. And you have been compared in your model to that of the Tampa Bay Lightning, which obviously they included a lot of pieces at the deadline and in the previous offseason. But really, it was Point, Kucherov, Hedman, Vasilevsky. It was the big boys that dragged them to a cup final and ultimately were triumphant there. That message appears to be getting across. I mean, Austin's been exceptional. Mitch Marner's been absolutely outstanding. You've been getting consistent performances from your top four, your goaltenders for the most part when they've been healthy. How did that message getting across apply to what you decided to do over the last 48 hours?
Well, I think the credit for that, Brian, has to go to Sheldon and the players. I mean, they're executing it each day. And but the messaging from the beginning, and I know, you know, in the end, you know, you're going to be judged after the season and how what the outcome of that is. But we really put a lot of emphasis on one of the things that we felt we lacked last year, which was the consistency in our form and the way that we played the regular season and how important that was going to be to set us up well heading into this stretch and securing a playoff position and in the best position we could going into the playoffs. So I think last year's disappointment, though, it's, you know, you hate when you go through it and you're so disappointed when you come up short of what your expectations are. I think the way that the players in particular have responded from, you know, the Monday after the last game against Columbus and early August in the bubble to now has served to me to be the greatest signal that the group is growing. And I think we're still going to have our ups and downs and our disappointments, but we're taking good steps. And that's been a byproduct of the coaching staff and the players working together. And certainly I think remaining consistent and locked in here throughout the year. And most importantly, as I mentioned on during Dave's question, being able to find a way to pull themselves out of a bit of a rut there early March.
Kyle O'Brien mentioned the big guys playing very well, and they have. And one of the big guys that we associate with your team has been Freddie Anderson. So I'm curious, two things about the goaltending. One, how much did the no quarantine for David Rittich impact your decision to go after him as a potential backup or a depth goaltender? And what can you tell us about Freddie Anderson? What should we be expecting of Freddie Anderson, his health, his availability, where you are at with him eventually coming back to this lineup when he can?
Sure. On the first question, Mike, on Dave, he was the goalie we'd gone through the list and what was available and keyed in on him. It just so happens perfectly that, you know, he's in Canada and that their team was on their way here to Toronto to be able to face us. So sometimes it works out, you know, really well in that way. And we had that with Galchenyuk early in the year as well.
Is Dave hitching a ride, Kyle, with Calgary here? Is he jumping on their plane coming here?
That's my understanding.
That's
amazing. So, you know, that sort of worked out well in that regard. But he was really, you know, as we went through the list of goaltenders that were available and he was the guy that we'd sort of keyed on. He has great experience. He was an all-star last season in 2020 and that same all-star game that Fred was at and has shown that, you know, he can steal games when he's on. And so we're excited to get him in and work with him. With regards to Fred, the way that we view it is, I know people would like concrete answers, but, you know, we view it that he'll be back, but he'll be back only when he's, you know, 150% healthy. And but the way that Jack has played and then bolstering the depth with David Rittich and then also with the way that Michael Hutchinson has played when he's been in, it just gives us the breathing room to allow Fred to only return when he's at his best. You know, he came back and he played, he was injured, he came back and played and had a setback, which has caused him to be out now. And thankfully for the play of Campbell and Hutchinson, it's allowed us to just really reset and say we need to get him at 100%. Come playoff time and have him ready to roll because he's a hugely important member of the club.
Okay, I can appreciate you not telling me exactly. I understand what's going on, but like, are you expecting him at least to return in the regular season at some point, or is that still up in the air?
Yeah, I think we're expecting him to return when he's 100%.
He's not giving me anything, Kyle.
Yeah. So, we certainly hope so, but that if it's with a week left or 2 weeks left or the start of the playoffs, we're not going to really focus on that other than, you know, he needs to be 100% comfortable and ready to roll and go from there.
With Kyle Dubas, GM of the Maple Leafs, so when you make deals, generally speaking, there are three options that are going to lead to the deal actually happening. You're going to give up a roster player, a prospect, or picks. You have exclusively given up picks for the most part here. How did you weigh that decision, Kyle, as opposed to either trading someone currently on your roster, one of your higher-end prospects, but deciding ultimately to trade almost exclusively future draft picks?
Yeah, a lot of it, Brian, is what the other teams prefer as well, and it seemed that there was, in the conversations we had, there was more of a focus on draft picks for the clubs that we were dealing with. One of our major goals is if we could, we were trying to get out from today without removing anybody from the room. And that, I mean, we moved Alex Barabanov to San Jose for Antti Suomela, but otherwise the group remains the same that has been here. And it's got a very close bond. Obviously this year is such a different year. They spend so much time together, especially on the road where there's nothing to do. So you're in the hotel and you're abiding by all the guidelines, but they're really, that's their only social interaction is with each other and at the rink and at the hotel. And otherwise they're when we're at home, they're at home if they're not at the rink. So the group has become very, very close and I didn't really want to tinker with that. And with our prospects, you know, whether it's right or wrong in the end, we know them and we've had a lot of them working with our development staff and in our development program already, and was trying to get through it without sacrificing them or having to have them come out, especially on the draft pick side. You know, we had a lot of draft picks, a surplus number of them in last year's draft. So, you know, I know we're pretty scarce in the coming two seasons, but we feel we stocked the system fairly well in October, and we'll just, you know, I think our focus now will be on, I think, any agent or player that goes undrafted in terms of a tryout or free agent situation. We'll have lots of opportunity here. So we'll hope to backfill it that way. And as always, the pick situation has a way of changing itself.
Yep, that can fluctuate for sure. Well, it's been a whirlwind leading up to the draft. We appreciate all the content you supply to us. That's our priority, as always, as you know, Kyle. And good luck tonight, tomorrow, the rest of the way, and into the playoffs, and I'm sure we'll do it again soon. Thank you for this.
Okay. All right, guys. Thank you. Have a good night.
There's Kyle Dubas, the GM of the Leafs.
He needs a break, too.
Yeah, he does.
He would have been grinding the last 10 days.
There was a lot that went into it.
Like, a lot going on this trade deadline, even more than usual.
Yep.
Expansion, cap, all of it.
Big time. And they've added a lot of pieces, so we'll continue to break it down. Final half hour coming up. The Leaf pregame begins at 6:30 right here on TSN Radio. You can watch the game on TSN4. Al's brother still to come. Jay's in action down in Dunedin, taking on the Yankees tonight. Robbie Ray will make his debut. We'll get into that as well.
Headphones?
You got to keep those headphones. Okay. You're fine. He'll stay in his booth. Hour three up next. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050 and on TSN 2.
Alpine Credits.
Yes, it's your English teacher, Mrs. Nelson.
Uh-oh.
You've been using the word approved quite a lot lately.
True, but...
You know there are alternatives like accepted, authorized, confirmed, validated. Let's try. I own my home and would like a loan.
Acceptedated.
Alpine Credits, where homeowners get endorsed, confirmed, permitted, allowed, okayed, and approved. Some conditions apply. Alpine Credits.
FSRA License 12616.
This hour is brought to you by Alpine Credits. Do you own your home and need a loan? Alpine Credits can help. Visit alpinecredits.ca to learn more.